Saturday Night Theatre.
Morris Denham, James Bolan, and Anna Cropper in The Last Chapter by Michael Gilbert.
Well, I should bloody well think so, too. Do you realize how long we've been waiting for this book? 2 years. That's what I said, 2 years. If you don't believe me, look up your records. I know. He's a bloody awkward customer. He promises and he doesn't do it. Sit down, Loftus.
Thank you.
I'm most terribly sorry for you, really I am. That splashing noise you can hear is my tears falling all over the desk. Well, you're an agent. That's how you earn your 10%, isn't it? If you like that cigarette, you'll have to smoke it in the passage, I'm afraid.
Oh, sorry.
Yes, I'm listening. I've been listening for 6 months, but my paper can't print excuses. I want the bloody book. We've paid for it. And what happens if I call the whole thing off? Exactly. He can't pay back the advance because he spent it. Do you know what a court of law would call that? They'd call it fraud. F-R-A-U-D. All right. 1 month. 30 days until the end of August, but not a day more. Not an hour more. Not a single bloody minute more.
Did I sound angry?
You did.
I am. That was Bannister's agent.
Ben Bannister?
None other. We've bought the serial rights in his book of reminiscences.
Well, they should make good reading.
Well, they might if he'd write them.
Won't he?
Months now they've been feeding it the same sort of crap. It's nearly finished. It's all but finished. It practically is finished. Just the last chapter to come, and then you can have it.
If it's just the last bit, couldn't we publish what he has written?
Well, in the ordinary way, we might. Batson, tell her she can jump off Beachy Head. But in Ben's case, no. Ben's an odd character. On the surface, he's tough as old boots. But like a lot of these rugged characters, he's a lot softer inside. He doesn't like hurting people. I've got a feeling he doesn't want to write that chapter.
But why is the last chapter so important?
Why? Because it's that sort of book. If he was writing a detective story, it'd be the chapter that answered all the questions. The chapter that told you who the villain was. Only this is real life, and maybe the villain's still alive, and Ben doesn't want to hurt his feelings.
Then I suppose we've got to wait until all the villains are dead.
Wait, nothing. We've paid money for this book, a hell of a lot of money. If we can't get the book, we're going to get a story. Why won't Ben write the last chapter? Who's he protecting? What's it all about? You get the idea?
Yes, I think so.
Go down and talk to him. Find out what's holding him. Of course, his agent may be telling the truth. They're all terrible liars. He may have written the book at all.
Well, do you think he'll talk to me?
If he won't, twist his arm.
Well, judging from his reputation, I don't suppose he'll be a very easy man to intimidate.
If he intimidates you, that'll be a story, too.
Yes, I suppose it will. I'll go down first thing tomorrow.
Go this evening. Remember what Nelson said? Lose not an hour. He hangs out in an old gamekeeper's cottage. The local squire lets him use it, I believe. They were in some hush-hush outfit together during the war. I've got his name somewhere here. Oh, yes. Naylor Smith, J.P., D.C., M.C. Durnfield Manor, Durnfield Wilts. If Ben won't talk, maybe Squire Naylor Smith will.
Has he got a wife?
Who are you talking about, Ben or Naylor Smith?
I mean, Ben Bannister.
Well, the answer's no in either case. Naylor Smith's a widower, and so's Ben. His wife died soon after the war. She was a French girl he met in the resistance.
Any children?
Children? Batson? Listen, darling, the answer's no. It always has been, it is now, and it always will be. N-O, no. Children, yes. It comes to my mind he's got a daughter somewhere. She's a student. She was involved in one of their nonsenses. Come to think of it, if she's inherited Ben's temperament, the authorities had better watch out.
Good evening, sir.
Oh. Hello, officer. I didn't see you.
I saw you. You nearly went back into the ditch.
Well, it isn't a very wide road, is it?
No.
I was backing to get my headlights on that signpost.
Ah.
I wanted to see which of them pointed to Durnfield.
They both do.
That's helpful.
Well, that way you go through Durnfield Village. That way you go through Durnfield Street. Which were you wanting?
I don't want either of them, actually. I wanted Durnfield Manor.
Mr. Naylor Smith's place?
That's right. Only I don't want that either.
Ah.
I want the gamekeeper's cottage.
Oh, Mr. Bannister.
That's right. Do you know him?
Oh, we all know Mr. Bannister, yes. We all know him. He's what you might call a character.
So I'd heard. Which of these roads...
Well, you could take either of them.
Oh.
The right-hand one goes through the village, like I said, then on a mile, and you find the lodge gates. Down the drive, past the house. You'll have to leave your car there. Walk the last 100 yards to the cottage, right?
Quite clear, thank you.
You could take the left fork. That'll bring you up to the back of the cottage, but it's not so easy to find. Not in the dark.
No, thanks. I'll take the high road.
Ah.
Good night, officer.
Good night, sir.
Take a pot at me. It's damn dark. Stupid bird. Hop off and catch yourself a mouse. Is that a light? No, it's a fire. He must be coming back if he's lit a fire. I wonder if he's left the door open. Hello? Mr. Bannister? Anyone at home? Well, hello there, boy. Hello, Vin. Hello. Well, you're not a very good watchdog, are you, old boy? Suppose I'd been a burglar. He's dead. Take a grip of yourself, Loftus. Probably quite some simple explanation. The dog was dying. Old age, had a fit. Bannister's going to fetch help. And that was probably him I heard driving away just now. He'll be back quite soon. Don't suppose he'd mind if I lit that lamp for a start. Matches. Oh, that's better. Now we can see. Now we can see. Mr. Bannister? Mr. Bannister? God, he's dead too. Get out of here, quick. Don't be such a damn fool. He may not be dead. He may need help. Anyway, it's no good running away. The policeman knows you were coming here. You're involved, whether you like it or not. Someone coming. Might be the killer coming back.
Who are you?
I might ask you the same.
This is Daddy's cottage.
Oh?
Where is he?
Are you Miss Bannister?
Who are you?
My name's Loftus, Gordon Loftus. I work for the Daily News. They sent me down here to ask about your father's book.
Is that your car in the drive outside the manor house?
That's right. I parked it there and walked down the path.
Well, where's Daddy?
I...
What on earth's wrong with the dog?
I'm afraid this is going to be a terrible shock for you.
What?
I don't think you ought to look.
Get out of the way.
What are we going to do?
There's a telephone up at the house. Get hold of the police.
What about...
I'll stay here with him.
Are you sure?
I shall be all right. Go on. Go on, I tell you.
I don't think Miss Bannister was very happy about that verdict, Inspector.
Oh, why was that, sir?
Obviously, because she didn't believe it was suicide.
This is where you found him, isn't it?
I saw the dog first, on the floor. Mouth open, showing all its teeth. And then Bannister slumped in the chair with the same sort of ghastly smile on his face. I shan't forget it in a hurry.
Well, that's the way cyanide works. Mercifully, it's quick.
You're pretty certain it was suicide.
That's what I think. And that's what the jury thought.
Hmm.
You don't think different by any chance, do you, Mr. Loftus?
Not sure.
Now, look. We know he was worried and depressed. The neighbors said so. The doctor said so. In bad health and worried about it. He'd been to see his doctor 3 times in the last month, right?
Well, lots of men over 60 start worrying about their health. But they don't commit suicide.
Well, some of them do.
It's a bit thin, isn't it?
If that were the only thing, I'd agree. But you heard the evidence. Cyanide. That's what killed him, and his dog, too. Now, cyanide's a thing which agents used to carry when they were parachuted into occupied France, I believe.
I believe they did, yes.
And if it was kept in an airtight capsule, it could keep for, well, 20, 30, 40 years.
Well, that's what they said.
And if he did it himself, that old dog makes sense. He was very attentive, that dog. It's understandable. He wouldn't want anyone else to have him. He'd take the dog along with him.
That's a pagan idea, but... All right, yes, it is feasible.
And if you're thinking someone else killed him, why should they kill the dog?
Obviously, because if they hadn't, Corp would have killed them.
Oh, sorry, Miss Bannister. I didn't see you there. What was that you said?
I said that anyone who wanted to kill my father would have had to kill Corporal first. He was a guard dog, trained to protect my father. He'd seen him lying on the floor, dead or dying in agony. He could have gone for the murderer. Even if he hadn't killed him, he'd never have allowed him out of the room.
Well, madam, it's a theory.
And because it doesn't fit in with your idea of suicide, I suppose that's all it is. Just a theory.
I'm quite prepared to keep an open mind about it, Miss Bannister.
No, not. That's the very last thing you're prepared to do. Once the police have adopted an official theory and have persuaded a coroner's jury to endorse it, that theory gets promoted. It becomes the truth.
I can quite understand your being up.
Oh, stop bothering me. Look, go away and shoot him, motorist. You've finished, haven't you? The case is closed. You've no more business here at all.
That's quite all right. I'll wish you good morning.
Poor man. You weren't very nice to him.
Suppose not. I don't like dishonest policemen.
Dishonest?
Have you heard the way the evidence was rigged at the inquest?
Well, I thought most of it was pretty factual. The squire saw your father walking down to the cottage around 7:30. I found him at 9:15. And the doctor put the time of death between 8 and 9, which fitted in with both times.
Well, beautifully.
And nobody else had been seen near the cottage.
They'd been heard, but...
Heard?
By you.
By me? Oh, that car, you mean. Well, I did mention that, you know.
You did? And when the coroner asked the inspector about it, what did he say? He said it was probably a car on the back road which had slowed down and was picking up speed again. You see, it didn't fit in with the suicide theory to have a car actually parked in the lay-by 50 yards from the cottage. So it became a passing car. That's what I mean by being dishonest.
Look here, Miss Bannister.
Laurie.
Do you really think... Well, I mean, if it wasn't suicide... It could hardly have been an accident.
Stop hedging. I think it was murder.
I see.
I think Daddy was killed and poor old Corporal at the same time.
But why?
Because someone was afraid of what Daddy had written in the last chapter of his book.
Had written?
Oh, yes. It was finished all right. He told me so when I phoned him that day. I was coming down for the weekend.
You sure? Sure he really had finished it?
But Daddy wouldn't lie to me. Why should he? He hadn't liked writing that chapter. It upset him badly. I could tell that when I talked to him. He actually tried to stop me from coming down. So you see.
Well, I'm not sure.
It's perfectly obvious. Here's the book. All except the last chapter. Right up to the moment when he was betrayed to the Gestapo and taken to their headquarters at Rouen. And some of the things that they did to him. Makes you sick to read about it. And to my mother.
What?
They cut off 3 fingers off her right hand, one by one.
God.
To try and make her talk. It was because of the things they did to her, I think, that she died before she was 30. And if it hadn't been for the RAF, they'd both have been finished off. The fight of honors came in that night at rooftop level and tore the place apart. Almost the only people who survived were the prisoners, because they were down in the cellars. Well, Daddy carried my mother out of the ruins, and they hobbled off into the countryside. They stayed hidden until our armies arrived.
My God, what a story.
Yes, it's quite a story. But it's a story without a finish, because whilst they were in that foul prison, they must have found out who the traitor was. And that's what the last chapter was about.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, whatever you do, don't say it's a theory. If you do, I shall hit you. It isn't a theory, it's the truth. And if you don't think it's the truth, answer me one question. What's happened to that chapter?
Well, isn't it?
No, it isn't here. I've turned the place upside down. I thought Daddy might have posted it to me, or to the agent, or publisher. He hadn't. It wasn't even burnt. Well, you can't burn 20 or 30 pages of manuscript without leaving some trace.
Do you know, I'm beginning to think that perhaps there might be something in it.
It's so easy. Drive up by the back road, park the car out of sight, walk up here, knock on the door.
But in the circumstances, wouldn't your father have been a bit embarrassed to see him?
Possibly. Knowing Daddy, I'm quite certain he wouldn't have allowed any degree of embarrassment to stop him from offering a drink. He'd have offered the devil a drink if he'd turned up unexpectedly. Well, he'd have a capsule ready to slip into Daddy's drink, and a poisoned lump of meat for poor old Corporal, drive off with a chapter in your pocket, and your reputation safe. The reputation you've been carefully building up for a quarter of a century. A reputation which was going to be shown up as a rotten sham, based on lies and cowardice and the torture and death of men and women who trusted you. There are people who kill for that.
What are you going to do?
Find out who did it. If I can. And you're going to help me, aren't you?
Am I?
It's your assignment. You've taken it on. Well, the paper wouldn't like you to back out.
I suppose they wouldn't, really. Just how do you propose to start?
That's easy. The first thing we want to find out is who was involved in Daddy's wartime schemes and is still alive now. And we can start right here with Squire Nellis Smith. He was in the same outfit.
Right now, you mean?
Well, why not? He's at home. I saw his car outside when I came past. By the way, I wonder where he was that evening.
What do you mean?
When you parked your car in the drive, did you see his car?
No. And come to think of it, the house was dark, too.
But when you went up to telephone, he was back then, wasn't he?
Oh, what's so odd about that? He'd been out somewhere and got back, that's all.
I don't know that I can tell you much more, Laurie. I told it all to the police. I saw your father when I was going out at this county agricultural nonsense in Durnfield. I told the police 7:45. It was only a guess. Might have been 5 minutes either side.
Did Daddy say anything to you when you saw him?
Say anything? No, I don't think he said anything. Just waved. He was walking down to the cottage.
Do you tell the police he'd been depressed lately?
Oh, did I?
Well, that's what you said at the inquest, Mr. Nellismith.
At the inquest, yes. Sort of terrible acoustics in that hall. Half the time I couldn't hear what that coroner chap was saying.
But you did think he'd been depressed?
Yes. Yes, he'd been down in the mouth.
Did he say why?
I think it was the war. He never really got over it, you know. I think writing that book was a mistake.
Oh? Why?
Well, it brought it all back.
But did he give any particular reason for being especially depressed lately?
No, can't say he did. Matter of fact, we didn't see a great deal of each other at all. When I offered him the cottage, I remember him saying, "All right, Tony, as long as we don't live in each other's laps." And all the time he lived there, I don't suppose he came up to dinner twice.
Did he talk to you about his book?
Well, I knew he was writing it. Between you and me, I thought he was dragging his feet a bit.
Oh? He didn't say anything about being in difficulties over the last chapter.
You like something to wet your whistle, Laura?
No, thank you. I was asking if he said anything about...
What about your friend?
Oh, well,
I usually take a whiskey about now.
Oh, thank you very much.
Soda or water? Oh, by the way, I didn't quite catch your name when Laurie introduced us.
Oh, water, please. Loftus. Gordon Loftus.
Ah. You knew Ben?
I knew of him. Everyone did. I never met him.
Oh, really? Then you're a friend of Laurie's, I imagine.
Mr. Loftus is a journalist. He worked for the paper that was going to serialize Daddy's book.
Oh, I see. I suppose you'll be able to cash in on this development. I can't say I approve of that sort of publicity. It seems wrong to me, but perhaps I'm old-fashioned.
You've got this quite wrong. No one's cashing in on anything. At the moment, the book's incomplete. The last chapter's missing.
Oh, sad. Never had time to finish it. Still, I shouldn't think it'll matter too much. The paper will find someone to... what's the word you chaps use when someone writes someone else's book for them?
Ghost.
Ghost. That's right, ghost. Ghost.
Well, a ghost writer could only operate if he knew what he was meant to write. In this case, it wouldn't be possible. The facts are missing.
How's that?
Daddy knew the name of the person who'd given them all away to the Germans. That was what was going to the last bit.
Are you sure of that?
Yes.
Did he ever tell you who it was?
He never talked about the war at all. When Mummy was alive, it would have hurt. After she died, he seemed to want to forget it. All I knew, I found out by reading his book. And that's full of hints and riddles.
And you think the answer would have been in the last chapter?
Yes.
If he'd written it.
Oh, he wrote it all right.
Well, then what happened to it?
It was stolen by the man who killed him.
Then I should think it's been destroyed by now, wouldn't you?
Possibly. Or possibly not.
Hmm. Well, what do you want me to do?
To help.
How?
Well, you were in the same, what do you call it, department, outfit, gang?
Well, we called it the circus, actually.
Well, you knew what was going on. You knew who could have given away things to the Germans. There wouldn't have been many people involved, I imagine. And a lot of them would be dead by now.
Ghosts.
What's that?
That's what you're asking me to do, Laurie. Raise a lot of ghosts who've lain quiet in their graves for 25 years.
Yes, I suppose I am.
Well, as you probably know, I was in charge of a section. It had some official name or number, I really forget what. We called it the circus. We were the English terminal of a bigger French outfit called Equipe Max, which operated in the same maritime area. Not a very healthy part of the world in May 1944. Crawling with Gestapo, Vichy French militia, agents, double agents, plain traitors, a lot. Equipe Max was about 30 Frenchmen and a woman. It had one single vital job. On D-Day, it had to disrupt the whole German communication center in the Rouen area. Blow up wireless masts, cut wires, wreck teleprinters. It had been preparing for it for months. The Germans had come to suspect it existed, but they hadn't been able to penetrate it. Our job was to supply the French team with anything they wanted and send two or three men over when the time came and coordinate the military side of the operation. Do you get the picture?
Yes, sir, it's quite clear. Who was involved at this end?
No, just the three of us. Four, if you count Jessica.
Jessica?
The second lieutenant, Jessica Rayburn, our wireless operator.
Who were the other three?
Well, I was in charge as a temporary major. And then there was Captain Aplin, Randolph Aplin, and, of course, your father. He'd actually been over in France for the last 6 months. And 6 months were a hell of a long time to last at that game. You needed luck and judgment. Have another.
Oh, thank you. A small one.
You sure you weren't learned?
No, thanks.
Oh, we operated from a small reception center. Just a couple of rooms in a Nissen hut, really. On the outskirts of an airfield, north of London. Jessica was the operator who handled our confidential signals traffic.
Oh, damn. Please, would you mind shutting the door?
Perfect moment, then.
Ben! Wait. When did he get back?
In the early hours of the morning. They've been debriefing me ever since. Wouldn't even allow me time to shave.
Oh, it's lovely to see you. How about I not?
Venez ici, mademoiselle.
Oh, you haven't shaved, have you?
It's lucky your Gerard isn't in England. If he caught me doing that, it'd be pistols for two at 10 yards.
You're quite safe. That was Gerard.
Who was?
Sending that message.
Did he announce himself, then? It's bad security.
No, of course not, but I knew.
How?
When you've been taking down Morse for someone for 6 months, you can tell his touch. It's like handwriting. Quite unmistakable.
Handwriting? Nonsense. It's loud.
Silly.
There's Gerard sitting at his little transmitter in a hayloft in Normandy. He touches the key. It's not a Morse message he sends. It's a message of the heart, a subtle transmission to one recipient alone.
6 months in France hasn't cured you of talking nonsense, I see.
It's cured me of a lot of other things.
Such as?
Illusions, Jessica. I've seen men and women stripped down to the bone. I've seen that when it comes to the point, the only thing that counts with anyone is self-interest.
With most people, Ben, not all.
With all men, and most women. The north of France just now is a sweet little slice of hell.
Oh, no.
The French know we're coming, but they don't know when, so they're playing it off both ends of the pack. The Germans know in their hearts that when we do come, they'll be booted out of France. So the last phony pair of kid gloves has come off. They're playing it really tough now.
Oh.
2 weeks ago, they strung up 12 workmen outside the power plant at Rennes because a dynamo broke down. They thought it was sabotage. It turned out to be a dud part from Germany. But it was too late to cut the 12 men down.
Oh, poor Ben. You must be glad to be out of it.
I'd be a lot happier if I could have brought my wife with me.
Ben, you didn't. Marianne?
Yes.
And when?
Oh, on Easter Sunday.
Oh, Ben, I'm glad for you, for both of you.
It wasn't exactly a white wedding. We were married by the curé in a small village outside Bayeux. Half the villagers turned up to watch, and the other half were lying out around the village watching for Germans. We spent our honeymoon in a hut in the Marquis, especially built for us by the resistance.
Oh, sweet.
There was an alarm on the second night, and we had to run for it.
Well, I'm glad it was the second night.
You've got a very nice mind, Jessica. I don't think we'll tell the others about it, not just yet.
All right.
Where is Randy, anyway?
Captain Appin's somewhere about nursing a hangover. I haven't seen Major Smith this morning.
They don't hit it off very well together, do they?
I'm afraid they don't.
Well, they'll have to make an effort if they're going to work together in the field.
Are they going over? How soon?
No one knows exactly when D-Day is going to be. But I'll wager we'll be over there before the end of next month.
Oh,
hello, Randy.
By God, it's Ben.
Yeah.
Well, that's one cheerful sight on a bloody awful morning. And whilst I think of it, congratulations.
Oh, so you've heard.
Of course I've heard. It was gazetted last week.
Oh, that.
The modest hero, on being informed that he'd been awarded a second bar to his military cross, remarked,
oh, yes.
How splendid. I missed it.
The snag is, it's making our commanding officer bloody jealous.
Uh-huh.
He'd give anything in the world for a gong, and here's Ben got three. It's not fair.
How is Tony?
Oh, his normal, bright, bloody little self. What else?
Have you cured him of saying pardon yet?
Oh, Lord, yes. We've progressed well beyond that stage. He's a quick learner, is our Tony. When he was on leave, he saw a film called Wings Over the Reich. Now everything's a wizard prang, shot down in flames. Next thing you'll be telling Jessica is you've got a trim little undercarriage.
Oh, I think you're very unkind to Major Smith.
You don't have to live with him, my poppet.
I should hope not.
I wasn't referring to Tony's sex life. Always supposing he has one. If he got into bed with a girl, do you think he'd have a handbook with him called Hints for the Upper Class Lover? Talking about sex life, I hope you've been keeping an eye on Gerard, Ben.
Oh.
You know what these fiery Frenchmen are like.
Gerard has been behaving himself like a perfect gentleman.
Not a single glance for Les Belgians.
Not a glance. All his thoughts are for Jessica.
See?
They regularly tap out tender messages to each other.
I've never tried making love by Morse code. Must be quite an experience.
Now you're both talking nonsense.
Good morning, Major. How's the war going this morning?
Were you aware that there is an air raid alert in progress?
The Song of the Sirens did penetrate my drink-sodden old eardrums.
It lays down quite clearly in station standing orders that when an alert is sounded, all personnel will carry steel helmets and respirators. If you don't do it, how can you expect the men to?
I don't expect them to. It's a damn silly order, and if I saw anyone not obeying it, I'd look the other way.
Now, hello, Ben. I heard you got back.
Oh,
well, I was powwowing with the DDA to the DDMI this morning, and he told me you'd arrived.
Touched down.
Come again?
Touched down. In the Air Force, we don't say arrived, Major. We say touched down.
No, I wasn't aware that we'd been seconded to the Air Force.
Oh, let it go.
You chaps spend all your time quarreling.
There isn't much else to do at the moment.
There soon will be.
Ah.
Oh?
Didn't the DDA to the DDMI tell you?
No, he didn't say anything.
I gather that Mission Zero is to be placed on 24 hours' notice to leave for France. That'll be you, Tony, and Randy, plus a signaller. I expect Sergeant Truman will be told off for that job.
Look, is this just a latrinogram, or is it true, Jen?
Top quality, Jen.
Then I think he might have told me first. Between you and I...
You and me.
Oh, huh? Shut up, Randy.
No,
How do you know this is official?
Because I've been told to put you both in the picture as quickly as possible.
I see.
No good wriggling, Tony. Zero R is upon us.
I don't find that remark funny.
Actually, it wasn't meant to be.
You two should make a wonderful team in the field.
I don't imagine we shall see a great deal of each other. I shall be organizing the base.
It's clear to me from that remark, Tony, that you've no idea what's really going on.
Huh?
Well, when you talk about a base, it presupposes an orderly arrangement with the enemy in front of you and your own troops behind you. It's not like that with the Equipe Max. The enemy's all round you. He's also in the middle of you.
What do you mean the Equipe Max has been penetrated?
That's something we'd all like to know. The next door outfit, the Equipe Domodossola, was broken up last month.
Was it indeed?
Well, no one knows where the leak occurred. Some say it was a girl who was not in the Equipe but knew a member of it and knew the work he was doing. She was indiscreet. The Gestapo forced her to reveal his name.
God.
He was taken secretly after dark and tortured all that night. They had to break him down quick, you see, because all these teams are organized in the same way. One man only knows three other names.
Well, what happened to him? The man they caught?
I know what they did to him, but it would only upset you if I told you. He was dead by morning. But he'd spoken the three names that mattered. They, too, were taken. From that point, the disintegration of the ring was certain. It took a month.
But does no one know all the names in a team?
Well, no one who can be made to talk, only the top brass in London.
But the...
Go on, Tony. Say it.
No, I was only going to point out that we here know all the names and details of the Equipe Max. In the circumstances, mightn't it be rather dangerous to allow us to go into the field? I agree, of course, that the military side of the operation has got to be organized. It occurred to me to wonder whether it couldn't be, well, just as efficiently organized from here.
The Equipe Max has been set up to undertake one very important, very dangerous task. Every man and woman in it will be risking their lives. When troops are asked to do that, they like to see their officers alongside them.
Do you think the sight of Tony will really improve their morale? After all, he won't be wearing his sandals.
Look, you've gone too far.
Easy, Tony. He's only pulling your leg. And the answer to your question is this little gadget.
Huh?
It is. Hmm? You can wear it quite comfortably attached to your back teeth. I don't wear one because I'm always afraid I might chew it up by accident, but a lot of our chaps do.
Well, what's in it?
It's cyanide. It'll kill you in 6 seconds.
Enchanting.
Jessica, another routine message, love and kisses from Gerard?
Well, it was from Gerard, but it's not routine, I know that. Can't tell you what it is until I've decoded it.
You never get tired.
X repeat X, what can he mean by that? Oh, I see. What'd you say?
I've been watching you do this for 10 days. You seem to work a 20-hour day. You must get tired sometimes.
I'm sure the people in the field get a lot tireder than I do. I can tell exactly what sort of day Gerard's been having from the way he transmits. I can tell whether he's fresh or tired or cheerful because things are going well or depressed or scared.
Oh, that's permanent, believe me. You're scared all the time.
Once, I even knew he'd been drinking too much.
Don't tell me you could smell his breath over the air.
There was a sort of flourish, a panache about his sending.
You'd better watch out for it when you're married.
Oh.
What is it?
You'd better read it.
Not too good.
Oh, you've both got faces like a wet Monday. Something wrong?
Read this.
The Major ought to see this message at once.
You think Gerard may be exaggerating? Lost his nerve or something?
Gerard's not given to panicking. If he says the Gestapo's sniffing around the Equipe Max, they're sniffing. It's May 25th. No moon. Something tells me you'll be off tonight.
Then you must let me have the pleasure of telling Tony.
You don't think he'll like it?
Like it? He'll love it. He'll love it so much he'll wet his pants.
When it comes to the point, he'll probably be as good as any of us.
Care to bet on it? I give you long odds. I've been studying Tony's running form. He joined up in 1940. In 1942, his regiment was ordered to North Africa. A week before it went, Tony transfers to Five Corps in England. Mm-hmm. 1943, Five Corps goes to Italy. Tony transfers to this outfit. Two very neat pieces of evasive action. Do you realize he sat out 4 years of this war without hearing a shot fired in anger? Oh. Hello, Tony. We've got some news for you.
I'll tell him. We've had this from the Akeet Max. Some bad trouble is blowing up.
Oh?
It looks as if they're going to want your help.
When?
We're in the middle of the no moon period. Jessica could send a message now, and if we get a positive response, you could go tonight.
Can the RAF be ready in time?
They've had a plane standing by for the last 3 days.
Then I'd better warn Sergeant Truman.
Well, he took that on the chin.
He's gone off to pack. And you know what his kit will consist of? Hmm? One cyanide capsule on each tooth and a box of spares in his pocket.
Hadn't you better be getting your own stuff together?
I suppose I had. Next time you're chatting on that machine of yours to J.R., darling, tell him to put a hot water bottle in my bed.
I don't know which of them I find least attractive. But I can tell you this, Jesse. If they keep up this feuding when they get to France, they'll be written off pretty fast. Mm-hmm. All right, that's their lookout. But they may get a lot of other people killed, too. In which case, I think they'd better not come back.
Turn that thing off.
Oh. What time is it, Jesse?
Oh, 5 to 1. They should be there by now, shouldn't they?
If everything's gone according to plan, which it never does. Yes, they should be dropping now.
What's it like? I've often wondered.
It's a wonderful sensation when the parachute opens. A feeling of complete release. For a whole minute, you don't belong to earth or air. There's no sensation of falling. Actually, it's more like flying.
That'll be them now.
What is it? Party arrived. Reception safely completed. What's that?
That's Gerard's call sign. Oh,
well, that's all right then. Jesse, what's wrong?
It's Gerard's call sign, but it wasn't Gerard transmitting. It was someone pretending to be him.
God. That means the Gestapo's moved in.
Of course, you understand I didn't hear about a lot of that until much later. Some of it only after the war, when I got the full picture of what was happening whilst the three of us were floating down into occupied France.
Floating down into the outstretched hands of the Gestapo, I imagine, sir.
Well, if it hadn't been for an extraordinary stroke of luck, that's exactly what we should have done. They'd located Gerard with their direction finders, caught him actually transmitting, extracted the details of our rendezvous from him. Poor devil.
You call that luck?
No. Luck came when our pilot made a nonsense of his map reading and put us down in the wrong place. Wasn't exactly a comfortable landing. We came down among a lot of brick stacks. Sergeant Truman, at the top of the chimney, he was killed. Aplin broke an ankle. I landed a little further on. I was only winded. Managed to get to a farm.
What happened to Aplin?
Well, when he could move, he made his way back towards Cherbourg. He was picked up soon after the D-Day landing.
He didn't try to get in touch with you?
He may have tried. All I can say is that he didn't succeed.
So you were on your own?
Yes. A day or two later, Max got through to me. That's when I heard about Gerard being captured. Well, Max wasn't too worried. Gerard didn't know any names. His job was simply to transmit.
That meant that you were in a position to pick up the pieces and get on with the job.
Yes, no doubt I should have been. But there was a further, and I must say, somewhat unfortunate development. It was your father, Laurie. He arrived in France. Came over against the wishes of our superiors, and I'm not at all sure it wasn't against orders.
He was never a great one for taking orders.
Look, in this case, if you'll excuse me saying so, Dave Watchers and so on, it might have been a good thing if he had.
You can say what you like. It won't hurt him now.
Look, it's your feelings I was thinking about.
Don't fuss yourself about my feelings. What do you want are facts.
No, of course.
After all, most of the people concerned are dead, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
And what we say won't worry them.
Oh, no, naturally.
And you needn't worry about my feelings, so say what you like.
Well, as I was saying, your father insisted on coming over. It was quite natural. No doubt he was worried about your mother.
No doubt.
But there was no time to make proper arrangements for his reception. Ben landed blind. He was caught almost immediately and taken off to their Gestapo prison at Rouen.
Did you see him before he was captured?
No, I was... Well, I was lying doggo at this farm. As soon as the news of Ben's capture came through, everyone went to ground. Wasn't that they thought he would talk. They knew him too well, but... Well, there comes a time. Even the bravest man...
I know what they did to him. It's in his book. I know what they did to my mother, too. They didn't talk. Neither of them talked.
No.
Do you mean no, or are you just saying it to please me?
I mean no. They would neither of them have talked. They weren't that sort of person.
But someone talked, didn't they?
Yes.
How can you be sure of that, though?
Obviously. Because in one night, about a week later, every man and woman working for a Keep Max was pulled out of their beds and shot. That's right, isn't it? That's what happened.
Yes.
Good God. Who... I mean, did anyone ever find out?
Several people were suspected. French collaborators. No one ever knew for certain.
That's where you're wrong.
Oh, you mean...
Daddy knew.
How could he have known if he was in prison?
He knew because the Gestapo told him. It was their technique. They enjoyed gloating over him and demonstrating their power and omniscience. It was part of the process of breaking him down. Of course, they didn't mind him knowing. They were going to liquidate him anyway. And they would have done if the RAF hadn't laid on this raid and blasted the whole vile place out of existence.
Did he tell you all this, Laurie?
He told me what he knew. But he wouldn't even tell me who it was. You were saying that during all this time you were lying doggo.
Oh, we all kept our heads down for a bit. And then I managed to get out and about and do a spot of organization behind the lines and... The Akeep Max was gone, but there were other teams doing useful work, disrupting communications, sabotage, or sort of thing. No, we carried on like that for 3 months until the final breakout.
Which team?
Pardon? What did you say?
You said there were other teams. They all had code names, didn't they?
Oh, well, yes. There was, let me think, there was the Croix de Lorraine team and the Hercule organization in the Amiens area. Those were the main ones.
And you worked with them?
Yes.
What did you actually do?
Well, it's a difficult question to answer in a few words. I suppose you might say that I coordinated their efforts.
Successfully?
I think we had a fair degree of success, yes.
You mean they gave you a military cross?
Just a minute. I've been thinking this out. If the Gestapo suddenly swooped down and pulled in everyone, it can't have been a process of gradual breaking down. They must have had an actual list. All the names.
Obviously.
How many people knew all the names, apart from your father?
It's a fair question.
Well, two or three people in London, high ups.
But the Germans couldn't have brought pressure on people like that. Who both knew and was in the reach of the Gestapo?
Well, really, I suppose the only person, actually, was Aplin.
But there was one other person, wasn't there?
No, if you're implying that...
I wasn't implying anything. I was stating a fact. There was at least one other person who knew all the names.
So ever since you came in here, you've been making hints and suggestions. If you have any accusation to make, I suggest you make it in plain terms.
Of course.
Well, then?
I was thinking of Second Lieutenant Jessica Rayburn.
Jessica? But she wasn't in France at all.
No, but Gerard was. The Gestapo were holding him, and she was in love with him.
Yes, but how... No, I don't see it.
You're not trying very hard, are you? The Germans had a private line of communication over the wireless directly to her and to no one else. All they had to say was, give us the names, and we'll treat Gerard gently, and you can have him back in one piece after the war.
Good God.
Of course, they broke their word. They always did. But she wasn't to know that.
What actually happened to her?
And Jessica? After the war, I didn't see a lot of her. When she heard about Gerard's death, she seemed to freeze up. She became very detached, almost inhuman. It's difficult to describe it.
As far as I'm concerned, you don't have to describe it. I knew the lady well.
You know her?
I spent 4 unhappy years at St. Monica's School for Girls, I beg your pardon, for young ladies at Amesbury. Miss Jessica Raeburn, CBE, was the headmistress and one of the principal causes of my unhappiness.
Batson? Oh, good morning, sir. No, I agree, it could be big, very big indeed. The suicide verdict killed the inquest, but if we could prove that the verdict was wrong, get it reopened, we shouldn't be sitting on half a story then. We should have a story and a half. Yes, I've got young Loftus here with me now. I'll warn him about that. I couldn't agree more. You've got to be damn careful. All the people involved are pretty important. One's a deputy lieutenant of the county and a JP. One's the headmistress of a large girls' school and, I understand, next in line for the headship of an Oxford college. And a third, well, that's Randolph Acton. If not the biggest fish, certainly the richest. Yes, I'll impress that on him.
You've located Applin, then?
Randy didn't take a lot of locating. He's not the shrinking violet type who hides his light under a bushel. He owns at least 3 very successful gambling clubs. Oh? Officially, they're members' clubs, but the only real qualification for membership is a full wallet.
Are they crooked?
The police say no. The play is straight. It's the debt collecting that's a bit rough.
How rough?
Well, I suppose you had a bad evening and wrote out a check for your losses. And suppose it occurred to you in the cold light of morning to stop the check. A bit later on, you might receive a visitor who would persuade you to change your mind.
You mean he employs a lot of thugs who'd come and beat you up?
Right.
He sounds rather a rough customer himself.
Yes. You'll have to be pretty careful when you interview him. Well, we could hardly expect Miss Bannister to do it, could we?
But surely the police...
Unofficially, I gather the police are very interested in Randolph Applin, but officially they haven't got enough evidence yet to justify an inquiry. On the other hand, it would seem quite natural for you, with this story to follow up, to go and have a word with him, wouldn't it?
I suppose so, yes.
Right, well, the Riverboat Club is the one the Major uses as his headquarters. It's on the Thames above Staines. It's got the extra advantage from his point of view that it's on an island, a private island. That means he can carry on his operations with a minimum of interference.
With the minimum of interference. Charming.
I suggest you go along this evening. Given as an ordinary gambler, you can draw £20 out of the petty cash float. Right?
All right. Yeah, here. Yes, all right.
Miss Ponsonby, you might check up that we've got the normal accident insurance on Loftus, would you? Gordon Loftus. That's right.
Rien la plu.
Not in here. Ah, private. Oh, let's try in here.
Hi.
What? Oh. Oh, I didn't see you there.
No. Can't you read? Perhaps you're blind or something. You're not blind, are you?
No.
Well, what that notice says is private. Strictly private. That means keep out. Admission by appointment only. See?
Yes, I can see that.
Well, what do you want, anyway?
I had a complaint to make.
Oh, a complaint, eh?
It seemed to me to be odd that zero should come up 3 times running, particularly with so much money on the ball.
Oh, you think the wheel's bent or something?
I thought it needed looking into.
Which table?
Which table?
That's right. Which table was it zero come up 3 times?
Oh, the one in the middle, the main one.
Harry? Mm-hmm. Leslie here. I've got a geezer here complaining you've been having too much zero. Yeah. Well, I just wondered. No bother, I can handle it. Now, you've been telling fibs, mister. The big table hasn't had a zero all evening. Oh, what's the game?
I'll tell Major Applin when I see him.
Yeah, but will you see him? That's the point, lad. Who are you?
Nothing to do with you. Kindly step out of the way.
You're not a policeman, are you?
I'm...
No. I thought not. You look stupid, but not quite that stupid.
Aye, wait, I've got it.
You're a private eye. Like on the films, with all them lovely girls. Yeah, what I can't make out is this. If they've got all them lovely girls, why waste their time detecting? You ever think of that?
Will you get out of the way?
We had a private detective here last winter. He fell in the river. Laugh? Mind you, it wasn't too funny because it was Christmas Eve and the river was full of sodding great lumps of ice.
Now, look here.
The water's a bit warmer tonight. All the same, it's 100-yard swim, best part of. Wouldn't do that sharp suit of yours much good. So if I was you, lad...
Get out of my way.
You know something? I've changed my mind about you. I don't think you can be a private detective. You wouldn't lay yourself open like that if you was. I'll give you a tip. When you're aiming to hit someone, don't signal your intentions. Just let it come out of the blue. Like this.
Leslie?
Yes, Major.
Who is it?
There's been a number of different theories about that, Major.
Who are you? What do you want?
Newspaper man.
Which paper?
Daily News.
Got anything to prove it?
Wallet.
Daily News. Second largest circulation in Great Britain. Oh, that's no way to handle our public relations, Leslie. Come inside, Mr. Loftus. Have a drink.
Well, I...
That's right. Ah, you don't want to take too much notice of Leslie. He's just a natural delinquent. Here you are. Unhappy home background, I wouldn't wonder.
Thank you.
Now, what can I do for you, Mr. Loftus?
Yes.
Ah, we're not afraid of publicity here. Nothing to hide. Everything's fair, square, and above board. Nothing to shock the vicar. We had a vicar in here the other night. Took a packet off us at Shemmy, too.
As a matter of fact, it wasn't your club I wanted to talk to you about, Major Applin.
Oh?
It was about your wartime experiences.
Oh.
I don't know if you read in the papers about Ben Bannister.
Oh, poor old Ben, yes. I read about it.
And the thing is... Some people had a sort of idea that it might not have been suicide.
No? Odd sort of accident.
Not an accident.
No? Perhaps you'd better tell me what this is all in aid of. For a start, just how do you come into it?
I was sent down by my paper to see about a book he was writing.
Are you the chap who found the body?
Yes, I found it. Miss Bannister turned up a few minutes later.
Laurie? Oh, she's quite a girl. Mind of her own. I bet it's her idea someone knocked off her old man. Am I right?
In a way, yes.
And she thinks it's something to do with what happened in the war? Someone who didn't want her dad to blow the gaff in that book of his?
As a matter of fact, he had blown the gaff. He'd finished the book, but someone seems to have walked off for the last chapter.
How do you know he'd finished it?
He told his daughter so.
Did he show her the finished job?
No, but he said he'd done it.
Ah. Well, I'll tell you what I think, Loftus. I think Laurie's got a bee in her bonnet. An odd girl. Odd upbringing. Wasn't spanked enough when she was young.
She's certainly a very determined girl.
I mean, let's get the thing into perspective. Agreed, none of us came very well out of that last show. Well, except Ben and his missus, of course. But the war's been over a bloody long time. It's ancient history.
I wonder if you could tell me what actually happened to you.
You won't get much copy out of my story, son. I broke my ankle coming down, had to be ferried back to safety, mostly in the backs of carts. Once I travelled under a load of turnips, and I can tell you it's a bloody uncomfortable way of travelling. No, I had my belly full of cloak and dagger. I got back to a nice safe job in the sappers and finished the war helping to run the docks at Hamburg. And was that a place for piling up the crackle? If I could have got home half the stuff I laid my hands on, I could have filled a ship. On second thoughts, you better leave that out of your report. It might be misunderstood.
One thing I couldn't understand was how you came to miss Major Smith. I mean, you both jumped out of the same plane.
I jumped. He was pushed. And it took a bloody long time to push him.
How do you know that?
I talked to the dispatcher who kicked him out. Mind you, I wasn't surprised. Tony was one great big bluff. Well, he got away with it, so good luck to him. It's funny when you come to think of it, Loftus. In the Kaiser's War, the people who did best, so I've heard, were the hard-faced businessmen who stayed at home. The losers were the poor bastards who went out to the trenches and got killed. Hitler's war, it was just the other way around. The people who really made something out of the war were the Tony Smiths. Look what his MC and his phony war record did for him. Got him a seat on the board. Before the war, he was a salesman. Then it hoisted him up to be chairman. And it got him a rich wife. And that's when plain Mr. Smith became Naylor Bloody Smith. She had the tact to break her neck out hunting 2 years after they were married. So now he's got an estate in the country and every letter after his name you can think of, from JP to BF.
You seem to have kept in pretty close touch with his career, Major.
I haven't seen him for years. You can't have reading about him in the glosses.
You said his war record was phony.
That's right.
Your theory is that during these 3 months he was behind the lines, he simply laid low, saved his own skin. And all the organizing resistance groups was lies.
That's roughly it.
Did it occur to you that he might have been picked up by the Gestapo and bought his safety by giving away the whole Equipe Max?
And?
And Ben found out about it and was going to tell the truth in his book? Wouldn't Squire Naylor Smith, DLJP, have gone to any lengths to stop that?
I don't believe he'd have the guts. Anyway, you'll never prove it now. All the German records at Rouen were destroyed. All the Frenchmen who might have known are dead, and most of the English, too.
But not all.
Thinking of anyone in particular?
I was thinking of your wireless operator, Second Lieutenant Jessica Rayburn.
Jessica? Good Lord. I haven't seen her or thought about her for 25 years. She was a nice girl. I wonder what's become of her.
Come in. Good gracious, it's Laurie. What a nice surprise. Come in. Do sit down.
Thank you, Miss Raven.
I've read about your father. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Do you mind if I smoke?
Please do. Did he ever talk to you about the war?
Hardly ever. I did know that you were colleagues.
Oh, colleague is rather too grand a word. I was the maid of all work in his outfit.
I suppose that's why he sent me to school here. It seemed most unsuitable in every other way.
You wouldn't have fitted comfortably into any school, Laurie.
What makes you think that?
You're a natural nonconformist.
Perhaps. Oh, by the way, I met Miss Cross on the way in.
Oh, yes.
I liked her.
I must tell her.
She said that St. Monica's might have to be looking for a new headmistress soon. Is that true?
It's true, but I wasn't aware that it was public knowledge.
Well, these things get out. Is it right that you're in line for Oxford?
Unofficially, I believe that the decision has already been made.
In your favour?
I understand so.
I wonder how you make out to the students.
Do you think we shall come into conflict?
Oh, sure to. I know what I'm talking about. I took part in more student demonstrations than any other girl in my year. The high point was when I was arrested for assaulting a police inspector. You don't approve?
It's not the sort of item I should include in our news of old girls' activities. But I suppose that a certain amount of dissent is a healthy symptom.
That sounds fine, but you wait till they start throwing tomatoes.
One must learn to dodge.
And fill the petrol tank of your car with treacle.
Goodness, do they still do that nowadays? Well, it was nice of you to come and warn me. I must have a lock fitted to the petrol cap. Yes?
There was something else I wanted to talk about.
Yes?
It was about Daddy's death.
Oh.
You read about the inquest?
Yes. Oh, why will they always put that in about the balance of the mind being disturbed? It's upsetting. It's usually meaningless.
It means even less in this case.
Huh?
Since he didn't commit suicide at all.
Is that your idea, or is it official?
No, unofficial. The police think it was suicide. They managed to force their ideas on the inquest.
Really? I should have said it was the only possible verdict, but then the newspapers may not have had all the facts.
They didn't mention the most important fact, that Daddy was writing a book about his wartime experiences.
Oh?
But that the last chapter, the one he'd just finished, was missing.
And you think someone stole it, is that your idea?
Yes.
And killed your father to get it?
Yes.
And poisoned his dog?
How did you know his dog was poisoned?
It's in half the newspaper accounts. Now, Laurie, you have got to stop this nonsense at once.
It's not nonsense.
You have been telling yourself stories, making up mysteries where no sort of mystery exists.
If there's no mystery, where's the last chapter?
I should think that the likeliest explanation is that he never wrote it.
I know that he wrote it. He told me he had. Why should he lie to me?
Well, very well, then he destroyed it.
How?
Burnt it?
In that tiny grate, 20 or 30 pages without leaving a sign.
Threw it away. Now, Laurie, you have got to stop this. If you don't, someone's going to get hurt. Badly.
I'll stop when I'm convinced that it was suicide, not before.
I once wrote on your report, Laurie has a good and tenacious brain. She is as yet incapable of that logical and disciplined thought which is the hallmark of a scholar.
Do you remember all your reports?
I remember that one because I thought very deeply before I wrote it. Let me give you some advice. Before you take any further steps in the matter, do some thinking. Think about the dog.
About Corporal?
Was that his name? Yes, about Corporal.
By the way, there was one other thing.
Yes?
When I was talking to Miss Cross just now, she was saying how sorry she was about my father and when it had happened. And when I mentioned the date, she said, oh, yes, she remembered that evening particularly. She remembered it because you'd cancelled a staff meeting at the last moment.
Yes?
They saw you drive off in your car and wondered what could have called you away so suddenly.
Private business, Laurie. Private business. Now, do remember what I said. Think about the dog.
Here you are, Loftus. That's from our man in Paris. You can keep it. It's a copy of what he found in the archives of the War Ministry.
The Croix de Lorraine?
Yes, they were operating in the hills south of Rouen. The other one is the Hercules organization from Amiens. Interesting reading, don't you think?
Very.
They were the two names Naylor Smith mentioned.
I'm sure they were. I wrote them down.
Yes, well, you can see for yourself. Nothing about Naylor Smith in either of them. Not a word.
Oh.
Okay, it's only negative evidence, I agree. Naylor Smith may have been working away in the background like a beaver. A pretty invisible beaver. But as it happens, we've just unearthed another bit of evidence. Something a lot more up-to-date and more definite.
Yes?
Simmons has been down at Durnfield ferreting about, talking to the locals. He's found two characters who actually saw Naylor Smith's car come out of the drive around 7:30. They were in the hedge opposite, and I think they may have been setting snares. They're a bit coy by that bit.
But that just confirms what he told us. He drove into Durnfield for a farmers' union meeting.
Quite so. And to get to Durnfield, you turn left out of the gate, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, he didn't. He turned right. Now, quite definite about that. On the other hand, if you turn right, it takes you to the back way, which leads to the cottage.
I suppose he might have had some other job he wanted to do before the meeting.
There was no meeting.
What?
There was to have been, but he put it off.
Oughtn't we to tell the police?
All in good time, Loftus, all in good time. They could have found out for themselves if they'd done the job properly. At the moment, it's our information, exclusive. But I think we might ask Naylor Smith to comment on it. Don't you?
Would there be anything more, sir? Anything more?
No, sorry, Mrs. Buck. No, nothing more. Did I hear a car drive up just now?
Oh, it's that young man, the one from the newspaper.
Oh, yes, I remember. Well, where is he?
He went off down the path.
Oh. Expect he was going to the cottage to have a word with Miss Bannister.
Well, no, if there isn't anything else, sir, I was thinking of slipping down to the village to see my daughter. She hasn't been too well lately.
Yeah, that's quite all right, Mrs. Buck. Oh, off you go.
Oh, thank you, sir.
It'll have to be the 12-4.
So he was lying.
Not just lying about there being a meeting. He cancelled it himself.
When?
At the last moment. He telephoned the other committee members.
Did he give any reason?
He said he was feeling under the weather. The doctor had advised him to stay indoors.
And that was a lie too?
I think so.
But there didn't seem to be anything wrong with him.
And anyway, he did go out.
But not to Durnfield?
No.
So it's pretty clear where he did go. He drove round, parked his car in the lay-by, and walked up here.
You told me that although your father and he were neighbours, they didn't visit much.
No.
So, to put it mildly, your father would have been a bit surprised to see Naylor Smith walk in unannounced at that time of night. Now, what would he do?
Knowing Daddy, offer him a drink.
Exactly. And when your father's out of the room, fetching water for the whiskey or whatever, nothing easier than to break a capsule of cyanide into the glass and put a piece of poisoned meat into poor old Corporal's dish.
Yes, but why take the car? He could just as easily have walked down.
I fancy we shall find that he was setting up some sort of an alibi. He couldn't fake the NFU committee meeting. It involved too many people. That's why he had to put it off.
Then who's the alibi?
We don't know yet, because he hasn't had to use it. But I don't mind betting that if suspicion swings in his direction, he'll trot it out fast enough.
I've had to put the meeting off, you say. Because I was meeting someone or other someplace miles away on the other side of Durnfield. 8:00.
You sound pretty sure about this.
I am sure, quite sure. Well, theoretically sure.
Meaning?
Meaning, Laurie, that
I believe it with my head, but not with my heart. He's the obvious person. He had the means and the motive and the opportunity, and what's more, he's been telling lies.
Well?
I just don't think he's the type.
You mean he hasn't got the guts?
He hasn't the shape of a killer.
To save his precious phony reputation, he'd kill for that.
If you're right.
I know I'm right.
What are we going to do about it? Tell the police what we think? Would they act on it?
I'm damn certain they wouldn't. Squire Naylor Smith, a pillar of the county. If he wrote out a confession and swore it in front of a notary public, they wouldn't believe it.
So we do nothing.
Couldn't you get your paper to publish what we found out? Well, not make any definite accusations, but sort of let the facts speak for themselves.
They never do it. Too scared of libel.
Then suppose we tell him.
Well, what good would that do?
Provoke some sort of reaction, don't you think?
Did it occur to you that it might provoke a reaction that was altogether too violent for our comfort?
Too violent?
If he's killed once to protect himself, has it occurred to you that he might kill again?
He's not that sort of man. You've said so yourself.
We were wrong about him once. We could be wrong again.
Oh, talk sense. He was able to kill Daddy because Daddy trusted him. We don't trust him. We'd be in our guard if he offered us a drink. What is it?
It's all right. I thought I heard something. Go on. If he offered us a drink.
We'd refuse it, that's all.
Well, I wasn't thinking about poison. I was thinking of something more direct. He's got plenty of guns in that room of his. Suppose he decided to come down here and stage a little accident.
Oh, he'd never dare.
Or a little suicide scene, perhaps? Love nest in the gamekeeper's cottage?
Look, you may be enjoying this. I'm not.
What's up?
I'm getting out of here.
Where are you going?
Oh, back to London, somewhere where there are plenty of people.
I shouldn't.
Shouldn't what?
Go outside. I thought I heard someone moving a moment ago. I heard it again just now. There is someone out there.
Are you sure?
Don't whisper. Talk in a natural voice. Yes, I'm quite sure. What I heard was a foot hitting that scraper thing. I nearly fell over it myself the first time I came here. Someone standing quite quietly outside that door. He's listening to us. I shouldn't think he can hear what we're saying. As long as we go on talking naturally, there's a chance he won't come in. There's only one thing for it. We've got to rush him. Now, can you reach that poker? Be careful. Good. Now, give it to me. Now, as soon as I'm in position, you've got to get up quietly, go across and open the door. But until then, keep talking.
God, I can't think of anything to say. One, two, three. Three blind mice, they all ran after the farmer's wife. She cut off their tails with a... God, but I'm scared.
Now.
Hold it!
Something bothering you, Mr. Loftus?
Sorry to startle you, Miss Madison.
Inspector, that man behind you. Watch out for him.
Oh?
He's dangerous.
I'm sorry to hear that. Have you two met before?
We've met all right. He's called Leslie. I don't know his other name. He works for Major Applin, a nightclub owner. He's a criminal.
There now. It just shows how easy it is to jump to conclusions, doesn't it, Miss Bannister?
Look, what's going on, Inspector? Who is this man? What are you two doing here?
One question at a time, eh? Now, this young man is Detective Constable Locke of the Criminal Investigation Department. Seconded as of now to the Wiltshire Constabulary to assist them in their investigations.
Leslie?
Sorry I had to be a bit rough with you, Mr. Loftus. Well, since I was acting as Major Applin's bodyguard, well... I had to act the part, see?
Did you have to be quite so enthusiastic?
Well, it took me 6 months to work my way into that job. Couldn't spoil the ship for a hape at the tar.
Next question. You were wondering why we were listening outside your door. Well, the answer to that is quite simple, too. We heard a man's voice, but we couldn't quite make out who it was. And we wanted to be sure it wasn't Mr. Naylor Smith.
Oh, why?
Well, I thought the time had come for a frank exchange of views, madam. Last time I spoke to you here, you expressed dissatisfaction about the verdict of the inquest of your father.
I was dissatisfied then, and I'm a great deal more dissatisfied now.
Oh, why would that be?
Because Mr. Naylor Smith lied about his movements that night. He said that he was going to a farmers' union meeting in Durnfield. There was no meeting, and he didn't go to Durnfield. Did you know that?
Oh, yes, we knew that.
How?
Look, you carry on, madam. Finish your side of it first. Then I'll give you ours, and we'll see how they fit.
Well, we found out, not for certain, but almost for certain... that he was guilty of a piece of despicable cowardice during the war. We think that my father knew this and had decided, at last, that the truth ought to be told.
And that would have been in the last chapter of that book he was writing?
Yes.
The chapter that disappeared?
Yes.
Ah, pity.
What's the pity?
Well, it's neat, it's logical, it's not... well, it's convincing, but it isn't true.
But surely you must...
Naylor Smith wasn't down here that evening between 8 and 9. He wasn't anywhere near here. He was 20 miles away in a pub at Latchingford called the White Hart.
Didn't I say he'd dream up a phony alibi?
Who says he was there?
I do, miss.
You?
Yeah, one of my jobs, you see, was driving the Major, particularly when he was out on a dodgy trip. Something he didn't want other people to know too much about, see?
Do you mean to say that...
That's right, miss. It was the Major who was meeting Mr. Poor Old Sucker Smith at the White Hart. By appointment, and not for the first time either, I gather.
The fact is, Aplin had been blackmailing him for years. What you found out about his wartime career was true. Not that he betrayed his comrades. I don't think that came into it. But the fact that he didn't really do anything at all. The story he told when he got back, well, it was a lot of wish-wash. He ought never to have had that medal, that's for sure.
See, from what I gathered from the Major, he used to laugh about it a good deal. Smithy hid up in a farm. The trouble was, all the young men on the farm had been conscripted by the Germans for forced labor. So they dressed him up as a woman.
What?
Yeah, it makes you smile, doesn't it? Aplin went back to the farm afterwards, got the whole story, and the photograph of Smithy in a skirt. Now, that was one of the things he was going to circulate if Smithy didn't cough up.
Good God.
It wasn't as if Aplin actually needed the money. He didn't. But he hated Smithy's guts. Squire Naylor Smith, DLJP, MC, the big county magnate. And what Aplin really enjoyed was watching him squirm.
Sadistic beast.
Don't worry, madam. He'll soon be laughing on the other side of his face. With what Lockyer has picked up about his business methods, we reckon we can put him away safe enough.
The only thing is, if he goes down, won't he take damn good care that Squire Naylor Smith goes down with him? After all, he'd have nothing to lose.
Ah, I'm afraid that's a risk we'd have to take. Yeah. That sounded like a shot. Come on. What happened, sir? We heard a shot.
Sorry, terribly sorry.
Well, what happened?
Cleaning the gun, must have been loaded. Went off.
I see.
There's no harm done, Inspector. Damaged that wall a bit.
That was lucky for you, sir, wasn't it?
No, Lorry, Loftus, a silly thing to do. Gun went off.
You'll excuse my saying so, but I should have thought you'd have had enough experience with guns not to do a thing like that.
Yes. Can't account for it.
Perhaps your mind was on other things.
Yes.
Like Major Aplin.
The Major who? I'm sorry, I didn't quite get the name.
Aplin. You spent quite a bit of time together in 1944.
Oh, Aplin. Randy Aplin, yes. Would you care for a drink, Inspector?
Not just now, sir.
A Loftus? No? I'm afraid I don't know your name.
This is Detective Constable Locke. He won't have a drink either.
Well, perhaps you'll excuse me if I do. I'm still feeling a bit shaken. Aplin, yes. Yes, of course, I remember Aplin. Quite a character, Randy Aplin.
I thought you might remember him, sir, particularly as you met him so recently.
Met him?
10 days ago, at the White Hart at Latchingford. I don't know if you happened to catch sight of the man who was driving his car on that occasion.
Or was it...
That's right, sir. Of course, I had a cap on then. Makes a difference, a cap.
Why are you telling me this?
Because, sir, I think you can help us, and we can help you.
Help me?
If you'll let us.
How?
It's come to our knowledge that Aplin was extorting money from you. Considerable sums. Has been for some time. Well, he's going down. Not for that alone. Other things, too. But this is one thing that will come out, that's for certain.
I see.
And it seems to me that the best thing for you to do, in a manner of speaking, is to take the bull by the horns.
I'm not sure that I follow you.
If you were willing to give evidence against Aplin on the charge of extortion, it seems to me that you'd come out of it very well, sir. The court would protect you. No names, no photographs, in fact, no identification at all. Mr. X, you know the form.
Since you're being very frank, Inspector.
Then you'll help us?
Must I give you my answer now?
We'd like to move in on Aplin tomorrow.
Then I'll give you my answer tomorrow.
Fair enough. We shall be at the police station. I'm going back there now.
No, don't go, Lorry. Or you, Loftus. There's something I want to say to you. Hang on whilst I show these gentlemen out.
The gun, Lorry. Pass it over here, quick. Both barrels loaded, only one fired. I think we'll have the other cartridge out safer like that.
He couldn't pick it.
Maybe not. All the same, better take no chances.
Won't you sit down? Are you sure you won't have a drink?
Oh, not as sure as I was, sir.
Ah. All right. I asked you to stay behind because there was something I had to say to you. I judge from what the inspector said that you know why Applin was blackmailing me.
He was blackmailing you because he hated you.
Did he? Yes, I suppose he did. I certainly hated him because he knew the truth about me. And that is very simple. I'm a coward. Always have been. Expect I always will be. In the ordinary way, you know. It's a thing a man conceals easily enough. Not from himself, perhaps, but from other people. If you don't hunt and you go to a good dentist and keep clear of barroom brawls, you can build up a very convincing model of a man. It's only a dummy, but with a bit of luck, the truth need never come out. But you can't do it in wartime. Not entirely. You could dodge and duck, but it catches up with you in the end. Caught up with me in France. Well, what makes you really afraid is the pictures you see inside your own mind. I could see that Gestapo whip shining with blood, cutting into a naked back, and then pulling away with little bits of flesh and skin sticking to it.
Don't.
You know, that's why when it came to the point, I couldn't even shoot myself. The last moment I saw my own head with the jaw blown away and the blood running out of the empty eye socket.
Oh, that's horrible. Stop it.
Look, if you understand that, you'll understand what I've been living with for the last 25 years. And you may begin to understand my admiration for your father, who was the bravest man I ever knew. He wasn't stupid like Applin. He had plenty of imagination. But he had it under control. And he was modest with it. You know what he said when I offered him the cottage to live in? As long as we don't see too much of each other, he said we should get on comfortably enough. Two old paper tigers.
He said that?
Yes. Of course he was joking. Hello? Oh, yes. It's Inspector Vigors. He seems to want to talk to you, Laurie.
Yes? Who? Are you absolutely sure? I see. Well, thank you for telling me.
Well, what did he want?
I think he wanted to apologize for disbelieving you.
Me?
Remember you said you heard a car starting up and moving away from behind the cottage that night?
Well?
They found someone who saw it. And they've got the number. KKJ116E.
So they'll be able to trace the owner.
I know who the owner is. That's Miss Raven's car.
Oh, Jessica. What on earth would she be doing there?
I did wonder why she'd cut that staff meeting.
That's 9:30 now. Do you think she'll come?
She'll come.
When you telephoned her, what did you say?
I just said there'd been some important developments about Daddy's death and could she come over as quickly as possible.
What did she say?
Well, first she said, oh. Then she said, all right, I'll be there at 8:30.
I still can't believe it.
Why not?
The woman.
Oh, I don't find that difficult. When it comes to the point, women are a lot more ruthless than men. And she's got the most to lose.
More than Squire Naylor Smith?
Well, for him, it was a loss of face. For her, it meant losing the one job she'd set her mind on.
Would she have lost it?
You know what college authorities are like. One breath of scandal, even old scandal, and they pull down the shutters.
How do you suppose she found out about the book being finished?
No difficulty. Daddy would have told her. He wouldn't spring it on her. It was much too fair.
Had she been here before?
Yes, when I was at school. I thought she came over to discuss my bad character. It was probably to talk about old times.
So she'd know where to put the car and the back way in.
Yes, and Corporal knew her and trusted her. In fact, they both did. That's her. You still don't believe it, do you?
It's such a cold-blooded thing.
She's a cold-blooded person.
What do you think she'll do when she knows we know?
I have no idea.
Well, Laurie?
Won't you come in?
Ah, and...
My name is Gordon Loftus.
I gather there's something you want to tell me. Something urgent.
Yes.
Well?
I want to know why you killed my father.
Aren't you telescoping two questions? First, did I kill your father? And second, if I killed him, why did I do it?
We know you did it. You put off your meeting that night and you drove over and left your car exactly where you've left it just now. Then you came up here and...
Go on.
You killed them, both of them. You poisoned Corporal to prevent him attacking you. And you poisoned Daddy.
Do you mind if I sit down? Now, which of them am I supposed to have poisoned first? Your father or the dog? Cyanide acts instantaneously. If the dog was lying dead, do you imagine your father would have quietly accepted a drink?
In that case...
If, on the other hand, your father had died first, the dog wouldn't have eaten his food. He'd have attacked me, you said to yourself. Or do you perhaps suggest that I stage-managed the affair with such exquisite precision that the dog consumed a slice of poisoned meat and your father drank a poisoned drink at precisely the same moment? It won't work, Laurie. Think again.
It's no good, whatever you say. I know you did it.
I see. Credo quia impossibile. Then perhaps we can move on to the second part of your proposition. Why should I kill your father, who was, incidentally, one of my oldest friends?
You killed him because he told you what he put in the last chapter of his book.
Which was?
The name of the person who betrayed Max and his helpers to the Gestapo.
And that was supposed to be me, was it?
Yes.
Although I never left England.
Oh, we know all about that. You sent the names over there. The Gestapo man had taken Gerard's place. You did it because you thought you could save Gerard's life.
I wonder. Yes, really, I do wonder.
What?
If it had been put to me, just like that, I wonder whether I would have done it. In the light of after knowledge, of course, the answer is no, you never could trust the Gestapo, but at the time... I was very fond of Gerard. Yes, I might have been tempted. But since it wasn't put to me, the question doesn't arise. I think you'd better know what happened that night.
I think I had.
But I think I should tell you alone.
No, I'm afraid I can't agree to that.
What I have to tell Laurie is for her alone. Well, what are you afraid of? Do you think I should try to poison her, too?
I think she might feel more comfortable if I stayed.
I can assure you that she won't.
I should be all right, Gordon.
Well, you can stay quite close, Mr. Loftus, in the kitchen. If you hear her scream, you can come rushing in. I'm sure you'll enjoy that.
Laurie, are you sure?
I'll be all right. Really. Well...
I came here that night in answer to a telephone call from your father. He was obviously upset, almost incoherent. But one thing was clear. He wanted me. So I put off my meeting and drove over. When I came into this room, the first thing I saw was the dog lying dead on the floor. The next thing I saw was your father, in that chair you're sitting in. He was dead, too.
It's a lie. You're making it up.
I'm afraid it is the truth, and I know who killed him. There's not the least mystery about it. There never has been.
Go on.
Are you sure you want to know?
Of course I do.
You don't think, perhaps, that after 25 years, one should let the dead bury their dead?
I'm going to know, and I'm going to see that everyone else knows.
Youth. So clear-sighted. Black or white, right or wrong. Let justice be done, though the sky fall. Never mind how uncomfortable it may be for the people it falls on.
It's no use. You can't talk your way out of this.
Yes, I see. Actions, not words.
What's that?
The last chapter of your father's book.
So it was you who stole it?
Stole, Laurie. Since it was lying on the table in this envelope addressed to me in your father's own handwriting, I hardly think we can call it stealing. You'll find what you're looking for on page 8. I've marked the place.
It's not true. It can't be true.
Truth, as the ancients pointed out, is a lady. She lives at the bottom of a well. She comes up very rarely. But when she does appear, there is no mistaking her face.
It was him. It was Daddy himself who betrayed Max and all his people.
Yes.
I don't believe it.
Nothing the Gestapo could do to him would make him utter a single word. I'm as sure of that as you are. But they had one weapon even he couldn't face. They tortured his wife in front of him. And they went on until he broke down. That's the secret he's been carrying with him all these years. In the end, he couldn't live with it any longer. So he wrote it all down in these last few pages to let the world know. Maybe also to clear anyone else who might be under suspicion. That'd be like him, too. And when he'd done it, when he'd written the last word, he ended a life which had become a burden to him. And he took old Corporal along with him for company.
Lawyer, is it?
Go away.
What's she done to you?
Please go away.
Very well. That's what you want?
Poor young man. You never know how near he was to the scoop of a lifetime. Well, Laurie, do we observe your father's wishes? Do we tell the truth, hurt who it may? Do we tell the world?
No.
Let justice be done, though the sky falls.
This is quite different.
Then might I suggest we have a good fire here. If we tore the sheets up and fed them in, one at a time.
Poor old Daddy.
The last chapter was written by Michael Gilbert. Morris Denham played the part of Naylor Smith, James Bolam, Gordon Loftus, and Anna Cropper, Laurie. Batson was played by Alan Barry, the policeman, Geoffrey Collins, Inspector Vigors, Peter Tugnham, Jessica Rayburn, Kathleen Helm, Ben Bannister, John Pullen, Randolph Aplin, Alan Cuthbertson, Leslie, Nigel Anthony. The production was by Nestor Payne.